Welcome to Dementia Matters, a podcast created by the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. It's our goal to humanize Alzheimer's research so that our community, our patients, our participants, and anyone else interested can get a better understanding of the work that's happening to fight back against this disease. My name is Nathaniel Chin, and I'm a geriatric memory clinic physician at the University of Wisconsin. I'm also the family member and son of someone with dementia. I'll be serving as your host for this podcast and asking the questions I believe are in the minds of many in our community. Thanks for joining us. Welcome back to Dementia Matters. I'm here with Dr. Elizabeth Chapman. She is a board-certified geriatrician and internist working at UW Health. She is the primary physician working on the inpatient geriatric consult service called ACE, Acute Care for the Elderly, as well as the Assistant Director of the Geriatric Medicine Fellowship Program at UW. She specializes in acute care geriatric medicine and has helped create the wonderful culture at UW in addressing delirium in hospitalized patients. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Chapman.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm going to start by asking, what is delirium?
And that's a good question. I think, you know, we have our sort of fancy medical diagnosis, but really what it is a fairly abrupt change in memory or thinking that's caused by an illness. And it can be any illness, either some kind of infection, which is what we see very commonly, or it can be just that you're recovering from surgery. It could be a medication side effect, but there's some sort of medical problem that's making you think differently than you normally do.
What does it actually look like to people?
So it can really vary. For some people, it can be that they're just more sleepy. They may seem more confused or more tired. But for other people, they can actually be kind of the opposite of sleepy, pretty worked up, agitated, especially in folks with dementia. We can see that they'll develop behaviors that aren't usually a problem for them.
Is it something that's easily diagnosed, or what actually goes into determining that someone has delirium?
So delirium is best diagnosed by a physician. So usually you really need to have someone who has a medical background take a look at a person and say, what's going on here? What are you noticing as far as changes? And then are there any symptoms that can give us a clue about what's going wrong medically? So sometimes people have a cough and, you know, they've got a fever, and then it becomes pretty obvious, oh, there's a pneumonia here. But other times it's not that apparent, and we have to do lab tests, sometimes imaging studies, or other things to figure out what's causing the confusion.
Dr. Chapman, can you explain to us what a person might feel when they have delirium?
You know, I think it's probably different for each person. My own dad actually was very delirious after a surgery, so I can at least tell you from his perspective what it was like. You know, he remembered kind of key things about what was going on. So he had had a major heart surgery, and there had been some complications in the operating room. And so he was in the operating room for a really long time, like 8-10 hours. And he remembered kind of waking up from the surgery and everything seeming just strange. He didn't really recognize where he was. Although my family visited him every day, he has sort of missing pieces of who was there, who wasn't there. And he kind of has put things together from what he remembers in ways that don't totally make sense. So, for instance, there was an episode in the hospital where he is convinced that the nurse taking care of him was trying to make him angry by playing country music in his room. And I'm pretty sure there wasn't music playing, and I'm pretty sure that if there was, it wasn't intentionally there to kind of upset him, but that's what he remembers. And he recognizes now that that seems goofy, but still that's sort of what's in his mind. So I think for the person, sometimes it's just that you feel terrible and there are kind of just these empty spaces where you don't know what's going on. And for other people, especially if they were like my dad and more on the agitated side of things, they can have these memories that almost seem like bad dreams. So things aren't totally adding up, but it's stressful and scary. So I hope for most people it's less like that, but we do have kind of a lot of people say it's kind of like a nightmare.
So is delirium different than dementia?
Yeah, it definitely is. So dementia is sort of this gradual change that happens to a person's memory or thinking, and it's caused by some sort of disease, Alzheimer's disease for a lot of people, but also strokes, something called Lewy body dementia, frontotemporal dementia. There's a long list. But with that kind of change of memory or thinking, it's going to happen slowly over time, and it's going to be something that a person experiences without a lot of ups and downs. So it's kind of just this unrelenting, progressive process. With delirium, it's going to be a relatively rapid change, usually over the course of days or hours. And there's often a lot of ups and downs. So at one moment, the person might seem sort of okay, but then maybe an hour later, they're really mixed up and can't tell you something that they usually are able to tell you. And that up and down pattern is pretty characteristic of delirium as opposed to dementia for the most part. The other thing is really that there's probably some sort of medical reason this is happening, which in, you know, Alzheimer's disease, it's a medical diagnosis, but it's not something like an infection, something that you can develop and then treat and it gets better. And I would say that's the other piece, that treating the underlying cause of a delirium causes things to improve and those changes in memory and thinking to get better.
Now, you highlight an important issue of this fluctuation, the ups and downs. This can happen within a day as well as within weeks. Is that correct?
That's true. You know, sometimes, especially for certain causes of a problem like delirium, it may not be something that sort of happens within minutes or hours where it's really obviously connected to one diagnosis. Sometimes it can be a little bit more slow to develop and then become more and more obvious over the course of, say, a couple weeks.
So what are these risk factors that you're mentioning for the development of delirium?
The biggest risk factor across the board is underlying dementia. So if a person has Alzheimer's disease or another dementia, their risk of getting delirium is just a lot higher than the average person. But there are other things too. So in general, being older increases your risk for it, probably just because as you're older, your ability to adapt to things and your body's ability to respond to different insults is just diminished. Also, things like bad vision and bad hearing increase your risk, and those are things that are also really common in older adults. Being a person who's sicker in general, so if you have a lot of medical issues, when you add another kind of new illness on top of that, say an infection, what have you, you're more prone to get confused or what we call delirious. And in addition to that, people who have substance abuse issues, so people who are heavy drinkers or use other illicit substances, also tend to get more delirium than people who don't.
So now you mentioned a few things that I think is really important. One, bad vision, bad hearing, as well as substances. Those are things that we actually can control. We can't control getting older, for instance, but these other ones we actually might be able to modify. Are there other things that we could do in a hospital that might reduce our risk of getting delirium?
Oh, definitely. You know, I think speaking first to the point about vision and hearing, bringing glasses along and hearing aids along is a really important thing to do. I see so many people in the hospital who leave their hearing aids at home because they're expensive and they don't want to lose them. But unfortunately, that really kind of blunts the overall ability for the doctors and the patients to communicate with each other. And it can lead to people getting confused about what they're hearing or not really just understanding what's going on. And so that's a pretty easy thing to do, is bring those parts. And, you know, I recognize that a lot of people coming into the hospital aren't coming on a planned basis. It's not like you've packed your suitcase and shown up to admission saying, I want to come in. It's usually through the emergency department or an urgent care where you maybe didn't sort of bring all the things along that you would like to. And so in those cases, having a family member or friend who can bring them to you as soon as possible is helpful. Other things that can be helpful to prevent delirium are things like staying hydrated, getting good sleep, and getting fed enough. And I think that, you know, staying hydrated and getting enough food sounds like something that's easy to do, but unfortunately in the hospital, there's a lot of reasons where we ask people not to eat or drink. There's certain tests that we do where you have to be fasting. Or sometimes if people are sick with certain illnesses, we don't want them to eat or drink because it can make things worse. And so that can be a challenge. Sleep is also tough in the hospital. And if you've been a patient in a hospital, you probably recognize that. You know, we come in at all hours. It's not your regular bed. It's bright. It's noisy. And we do our best to keep it a quiet, calming environment. But there are just some limits to that. And so I say try to get good sleep, but I recognize that unless you're sort of the most talented of sleepers, that may not be possible for everyone.
And something that I've noticed during the day, trying to keep people active and busy when possible, whether it's bringing in something from home that they enjoy doing, a hobby or a book, but making sure that they're not just sleeping during the day, which can happen.
Yeah, definitely. You know, a lot of people are sick and they don't want to do stuff. But on the other hand, if you're just sitting in a bed all day, the chances you nod off and take a couple naps throughout, you know, the morning and afternoon is pretty high. And in that case, when nighttime comes around, you just might not be that tired. So if we add that kind of lack of daytime activity to all the other things that make sleep hard in the hospital, it can be really hard to get a good night's rest. So we definitely want people, as much as they can tolerate it, up in a chair, reading, you know, watching television isn't the greatest diversion, but it's something, and up walking, because in addition to helping people be tired at night, we know that increased activity in the hospital is associated with lots of good things, like less functional decline, so less of a chance that you're going to lose the ability to do certain things you need to do to take care of yourself once you leave.
These are really good tips, and I'm wondering if you have any others specifically for people who already have cognitive impairment or dementia. If they come into the hospital, are there certain things that family members should be thinking about to keep them from maybe developing more confusion?
So when someone has dementia, we really want to get to know the person outside the hospital, who they are and what they like to do, what their routine is, so that the hospital is as close to kind of normal as possible. And that's a big part of what we do on the ACE service. So we have a wonderful nurse named Stephanie, and she tries to talk to family members about every single patient where it's possible to get a good idea of, if this person can't tell me, you know, when do they get up in the morning? When do they go to bed at night? What is their usual activity routine? Do they like certain shows on TV? Do they listen to certain music? Because knowing all of those things can be really helpful to make the hospital a less stressful environment. If a person has some behaviors associated with their dementia to begin with, it's important for us to know those too. So we have to kind of go with the flow for people who have dementia and figure out, you know, how can we kind of approximate their routine or deal with those behaviors that might come up without causing too much trouble.
Are there other policies that the hospital has to help reduce the risk of delirium for all people?
Sure. So I think there's a few big things we try to do. One of the biggest ones is make sure we have an accurate medication list. So our pharmacists do a very careful job trying to figure out what medications a person is on at home and how they take them. Because we know that if we start a medicine we think someone's taking, but they're actually not taking it at home, it can cause side effects and cause delirium. By the same token, if we have someone who's always getting a medicine at home that for some reason we don't know about, and it can cause a withdrawal syndrome, they could get confused because of that. Or if someone's taking lower dose and we give them too much of a dose in the hospital, that can cause difficulties. So we really try to do our best to make sure the list of medicines is accurate. Some of the other things that we try to do are to have folks in every kind of unit in terms of nursing who are what we call geriatric resource nurses. So nurses who have some extra training in geriatrics who can help troubleshoot for people with dementia and kind of think outside the box. And our overall goal is really to try to make the hospital more friendly for people with dementia, knowing that it's not a friendly place in general for people who have trouble with memory and kind of orientation. Beyond that, we have our ACE service, and we're always happy to see people. And so I think that's another kind of unique thing about our hospital is that we have a whole team, and it's not just me. I mentioned our nurse, Stephanie, but we also have a physical therapist, a pharmacist, and a physician assistant, as well as a social worker. And so we all work together to help out people who are in the hospital and at risk for delirium, or if they're delirious, help try to figure out how to manage it best.
And for those institutions that don't have the luxury of an inpatient geriatric team, it really is about educating both patients, families, staff, and kind of developing systems that meet people where they are, help us understand who people are.
Exactly, yeah. So if you can kind of work together with the nursing staff that's taking care of a patient and make sure that your loved one is a priority for them and that they know as much as they can possibly know about that person, they can take better care of them.
So then, is delirium a risk factor for dementia?
That's a good question, and a lot of the emerging research is saying that it is. And, you know, I think that that's a scary thing. You know, with my own dad, knowing he was pretty delirious, I worry about where he'll be. But there have been a lot of studies that look at people who have a diagnosis of delirium and then follow them over time, over decades. And it seems as though the people who had delirious episodes are more likely to develop dementia down the road. And how that's possible, we don't exactly know. You know, we don't know if it's the delirium that somehow harms the brain and then makes you more at risk for dementia, or if maybe that delirium is just happening because you're already showing that your brain is more susceptible to these kind of problems. So maybe you're going to get dementia down the line, and your brain has changes that aren't showing up when you're well, but when you're sick, there's enough stress there that they start coming out. It's really just not clear.
Well, and to clarify, though, by having delirium, it doesn't mean you're going to get dementia. It just is a slight increase in your risk of having
exactly,
dementia.
Yeah. Just like any of those risk factors we talk about, if your parents maybe had dementia or something like that, that does increase your risk, but it doesn't mean you're going to get it. And I think that's often something that scares people when we talk about risk factors, is if you have that risk factor, you think, oh gosh, I'm definitely going to get this bad outcome. And it's not necessarily the case. It just is another sort of factor that you have to think about.
Are there other things that patients and their families should be thinking about when it comes to recovery from delirium? After you've left the hospital, are there things that people should be doing?
Sure. You know, I think that as a family member, you really want to be sure that once a person gets back home, there's just some extra eyes on what's going on. Because we know that delirium is this fluctuating disease, meaning there's ups and downs. And so as it gets better, the good times are more frequent and longer. But there may still be times where a person is pretty confused. And you want to be sure that person has the support in place as they're recovering so they don't get themselves into trouble. That, you know, if they're still here and there having spotty episodes with their thinking, that someone's keeping track of their medications, that they're not making any kind of big life decisions that may be important. I really encourage people who've had an episode of delirium to follow up with their primary doctor and be sure that they're getting screening for their memory going forward, and that people are kind of on the lookout to make sure that things are going okay, the checkbook's getting managed all right, medications are getting managed appropriately, and that sort of thing. And then the other thing I think is just kind of that supportive care. Stay hydrated, eat well, make sure you're getting good rest at home, because we know that that helps delirium in the hospital, and it certainly would help at home too. So trying to just kind of eliminate the chance that some new medical issue could come up and make you delirious all over again.
So the care doesn't stop when a person's discharged.
I hope not.
Well, wonderful. And again, thank you, Dr. Chapman, for coming on our show today.
Thanks for having me. It was lots of fun.
Dementia Matters is brought to you by the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. The Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center combines academic, clinical, and research expertise from the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health and the Geriatric Research, Education, and Clinical Center of the William S. Middleton Memorial Veterans Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin. It receives funding from private, university, state, and national sources, including a grant from the National Institutes of Health for Alzheimer's Disease Centers. This episode was produced by Rebecca Wazaleski and edited by Zoe Rugel. Our musical jingle is Cases to Rest by Blue Dot Sessions. Check out our website at adrc.wisc.edu. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at WisconsinADRC. If you have any questions or comments, email us at dementiamatters@medicine.wisc.edu. Thanks for listening.